Well, in the 1830s, a farmer in New York named William Miller began to preach that Christ would return to earth in the year 1843. He marked the year, 1843. He was ignored at first, but his message began to grow in popularity thanks to some spiffy marketing and promotion by a friend. And by the time the year 1843 rolled around, about 100,000 people counted themselves as Millerites, followers of this William Miller and his preaching that said Christ would return in 1843. Now, though Miller himself had never set an exact date for Christ's return, somehow April 3rd became the date in 1843 that people began to look forward to. April 3rd. And so maybe if he was off by about 180 years, three more days, right? April 3rd. As you might imagine, I'm pretty sure you know, April 3rd, 1843 came and went, and that date became known to the Millerites as the Great Disappointment. The Great Disappointment. And as you might imagine, the date was reset, and they look forward to another day, and then another day, and it went on and on. And it's easy for us to laugh at these people, but we all are hoping and expecting for a return of Christ to earth. There are various legends about how the Millerites got ready for that time, for that day of Christ's return. Some of them are said to have put on white robes and gone up on the roofs of their homes on April 3rd that year, 1843. Others are said to have sold property or even given away all their property and possessions because what good would that be if they all flew away with Christ, right? And probably these stories are a bit embellished. We really don't think that they're that historically accurate, but it's easy to laugh at the Millerites or the thousands of others throughout Christian history who've expected an imminent return of Christ. But truthfully, even Jesus' first disciples expected that Jesus would return to earth very soon, even within their lifetimes. And they believed that, they thought that because of the things Jesus said. The story we're going to look at today is in the middle of a group of stories in Matthew's gospel, a section of stories in Matthew's gospel, where Jesus was telling his disciples about what his return might be like. The section begins in chapter 24 of Matthew with Jesus announcing the temple buildings were going to be demolished. He said, these are going to be destroyed. And the disciples, in response, asked him, when, Lord? When? Tell us when these things will happen. What will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? And as he often did, Jesus replied to their questions with parables and images that are a little bit difficult to break down and perhaps to understand. If you were here last week, we looked at one of those parables and the answer to that question, the king who had the wedding banquet for his son. I remember some of the people he invited, he ended up having killed, and then one guy showed up in the wrong clothes, and he threw him out of the banquet. Jesus' answers to these questions of the disciples, when is this going to happen, what is it going to look like, were a little bit cryptic and hard to understand. And after one parable in this section about a fig tree, Jesus said, I assure you, this generation won't pass away until all these things happen. So no wonder his disciples expected for him to return soon after his resurrection and ascension. He'd said he'd come for them. Here's John, I'll return and take you to be with me, so that where I am, you will be with me too. No wonder the disciples of Jesus thought his return was imminent in their lifetimes, before they died. And that belief created some angst in the early church when some of those very disciples began to get old and die. But Christ hadn't returned. And when Christ's return hadn't taken place right away, Christians started to wonder if perhaps they had misunderstood Jesus' teaching about his return. In fact, the whole letter of 2 Peter that Bobby just read from is an address to that question. Hey, the disciples are getting old and dying. Those who are with the Lord, is he really coming back? Did we misunderstand? And 2 Peter says, no, hey, just be ready. It's coming. This day is coming. And he says things like, 1,000 years to the Lord is like one day. So we don't know the timing and everything. So the bottom line is, if we're a bit confused or not sure about what Christ's return will be like or when it will be, we're in good company. And we've been in good company with Christians who have been waiting for Christ's return for 2,100 years or so now. There are a lot of images and traditions that have developed about this return of Christ over the years. Some of those images include Christ coming on the clouds. Some images include a final judgment where the righteous will be validated and the unrighteous punished. Some of these ideas include the image of heaven and earth coming together, merging together into one glorious whole, over which God will reign forever and ever and always. Today, most Christians tend to respond to the idea of Christ's return in one of two ways. Either they get fixated on the when, the date. When's it going to be? What are the sign of the times? Are there secret formulas hidden in the scriptures that give us clues about Christ's return? These are the people you'll see with charts and numbers and images trying to figure out when is it going to be? Either most Christians either respond by really focusing on the when of it, or the second response that's common is that they've largely ignored it. They've at least become complacent about this idea of Christ's return. And my guess is that that's the dominant response of Christians today when it comes to thinking about Christ's return. It hasn't happened for 2,100 years or so now. Maybe it'll never happen. And if it does, we can't know the time or the when, so why worry about it? My guess is that most of us here this morning are in that category. We know, we kind of accept that we're not going to know when it is, and so we kind of forget about the idea. And the parable we're going to look at today is only found in Matthew's gospel, and it's a warning about being ready for Christ's return. It's a warning about being ready. That's the nature of the story. I'm going to turn to Matthew 25 and start reading with verse 1 this morning. This parable that says, be ready no matter when it is. All right? Matthew 25. At that time, the kingdom of heaven will look like 10 young bridesmaids who took their lamps and went out to meet the groom. Now, 5 of them were wise and the other 5 were foolish. The foolish ones took their lamps but didn't bring oil for them. But the wise ones took their lamps and also brought containers of oil. When the groom was late in coming, they all became drowsy and went to sleep. But at midnight there was a cry. At midnight there was a siren. Look, the groom can't come out to meet him. Then all those bridesmaids got up and prepared their lamps. But the foolish bridesmaids said to the wise ones, give us some of your oil because our lamps have gone out. But the wise bridesmaids replied, no, because if we share with you, there won't be enough for our lamps and yours. We have a better idea. You go to those who sell oil and buy some for yourselves. But while they were gone to buy oil, the groom came. Those who were ready went with him into the wedding. Then the door was shut. Later, the other bridesmaids came and said, Lord, Lord, open the door for us. But he replied, I tell you the truth, I don't know you. Therefore, keep alert, because you don't know the day or the hour. Another interesting, strange, maybe fantastic parable of Jesus's that I find laughable, at least about a few things, like half the bridesmaids take lamps but not oil. I mean, have you ever gone on a camping trip taking flashlights and no batteries? That's what they did. Not prepared. And also, the foolish girls leave to go buy oil in the middle of the night. And I was kind of wondering what store is nearby on your camping trip that has batteries for sale at midnight. They maybe, we don't know, found some oil at midnight for sale. Maybe they didn't. The story doesn't say. But I kind of wonder what store is going to be open that night, that late at night. But more than having strange characteristics, this parable makes me a bit uncomfortable. Perhaps because it seems to lack any mercy or grace. That's the way it feels to me. The foolish bridesmaids get all the blame in the story, but it's the groom who's late. Doesn't he deserve a little blame? And shouldn't they be granted a little bit of grace? Also, the wise bridesmaids don't share their oil. They don't share with their neighbors. But how wise is it to not share with your neighbors? Where's the mercy from the wise bridesmaids to the foolish ones? And then they're more concerned more about themselves than they are about their neighbors. And then right when I thought grace might appear in the story, where the foolish girls returned from their run to the store to get oil, they're denied entry. Right when we might expect the story to turn, oh, okay, come on in. Nope, they're denied entry forcefully. I don't know you. Last week we looked at a parable about a king who was throwing a wedding feast who invited everyone everywhere in his kingdom. But this week the story, right after that, is like, nope, if you're late, you're not welcome. You're out. There's no mercy or grace. So yeah, it makes me a bit uncomfortable. Thankfully, the parable ends with commentary explaining its purpose. Therefore, keep alert because you don't know the day or the hour. Now, this would be a real easy two-point sermon here, right? One, keep alert. Two, you don't know the day or the hour. But I think most of you in this room accept that second premise. We don't know when this return is going to happen. I think most of us would say, yeah, we don't know. We've been waiting a long time, and we're not sure when it's going to happen. And so I think you accept that. So I want to do something different this morning. I want to focus on the second thing Jesus said at the end of this parable, which is be alert, keep alert. Or my translation is simply be ready, be ready. I want to ask, what does it mean to be ready? And offer three reflections on being ready for Christ's return. All right? Three reflections about being ready. Here goes, first one. We get ready for Christ's return by being faithful and obedient. We get ready by doing the things that Jesus told us to do. In the parable that Jesus told, the wise bridesmaids got ready by taking lamps, trimming them, burning them, and taking extra oil, and going out to meet the groom. They had to do something to be ready. The way we get ready for a test is by studying. The way we get ready for a trip is to pack our clothes, or the right clothes in a suitcase for the right weather where we're going. The way we get ready for a crawfish boil is to starve ourselves for 24 hours, maybe 48 hours. Get really hungry so we're ready for crawfish. That's the way we get ready. And the way we get ready for Christ's return is to do something too, to be obedient, to be faithful to what Christ taught us to do. And I think you know what faithfulness and obedience looks like. I know you do. But as Jesus continues in his teaching on this subject, he gives us another story that tells us concretely what obedience and faithfulness looks like. He says, it looks like those who care for the least of those among us. And that's the text for next week. We're going to look at that story next week. Saying that we get ready by doing things isn't teaching us to depend on our good works in order to be loved and accepted by God. It's simply acknowledging that our faith is demonstrated by our action. It's simply acknowledging that our faith is demonstrated by what we do and how we live. We don't get ready for anything without action of some kind. And we don't get ready for Christ's return unless we do the things that he taught us to do. Getting ready means doing the right things, faithfulness, obedience, doing what Jesus asked us to do. Secondly, we get ready by being patient. Readiness requires patience. The groom in Jesus' parable arrived late enough that the girls who were waiting fell asleep. Don't you think, as I said earlier, the groom deserves a little blame in this story? My mom would have said so. She would have lectured the groom, right? Being late is disrespectful and arrogant. It says to everyone else, my time is more important than yours. Does that give you a little window into my life? Whether that's all true or not, one thing we know is that when you have to wait, you need patience. Have any of you here ever had to wait on someone? Come on. And if you didn't nod or raise your hand, you're the one we're all waiting on. So get it together. Man, my friend Glenda McDonald, she's done a lot of waiting over the last couple weeks. She's been waiting to move into a tiny house that she built. It took her a long time to build it, and finally she got it to the place. And then before she could move in, she had to wait on an electrician. She had to wait on a plumber. She had to wait on the internet guy to install. That's miserable, don't you know? Oh, we'll be there between 10 and 10 the next day. One of the electricians told her, well, in our industry, we don't really work on a time schedule. She said, no kidding. Waiting takes patience, but imagine waiting when no one knows the day or the hour of the arrival. It could be a long wait. And Christians, we've been waiting for a long time for Christ's return. So long that it's quite tempting to think that it will never happen. So long that it's easy to become complacent and stop thinking about getting ready. And that's what Jesus was warning us about. Don't become impatient or give up altogether on waiting. Being ready requires patience, so wait patiently, hopefully for the Lord. Hope, wait, 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 the psalmist tells us. Wait patiently for the Lord so that you won't be caught unprepared. Getting ready requires patience. So getting ready means doing the right things, being faithful. Being ready means being patient, waiting patiently with hope. Last thing I want to say this morning is that being ready means you can be at ease. You can rest. If you're doing the right things, if you're being patient, staying aware, you can rest well. You can be at ease. Striking to me that all the bridesmaids in this parable fell asleep. Fell asleep, all of them, the foolish ones and the wise ones. Now, you'd think they'd be a little bit excited. Have you ever fallen asleep waiting for a wedding to take place? Probably not, because we're excited about it. We want to get there, and I kind of imagine these 10 bridesmaids, maybe at least a few of them wanted to get a jump on the other ones to get in the wedding and check out the groomsmen. We're the first ones in. I mean, that's just my imagination. But they fell asleep too. They all fell asleep. Maybe it was because the groom was so late, but perhaps the wise bridesmaids could fall asleep because they knew they were ready. They had their lamps trimmed and burning. They had extra oil. They were prepared so they could rest well because they were ready. And if you're ready for Christ's return, doing the right things, waiting patiently, you can afford to be at ease and at rest. It's actually one of the things that I hope you'll most walk away with and remember this morning. I care that you hear this. Christ's return doesn't have to be a scary thing if you're ready. When I was growing up, it was a time during that churches taught that Christ's return would be scary. And to be fair, there are some images in Scripture. What we read from 2 Peter this morning, the heavens and earth will melt away in this fire. I mean, that sounds scary. Our church, when I was maybe 10 or 11, showed this movie called A Thief in the Night. I found the picture for it this last week. Maybe some of you remember it. It was a movie that depicted wild and crazy scenes about Christ's return, and it was like a horror movie. It was meant to scare us all into faithfulness and obedience. And my church meant well, but that kind of fear-based teaching was counter-effective if it was meant to draw me toward Christ. And as my understandings of Jesus and our scriptures have grown, I've come to trust that Jesus' coming is not anything I have to worry about or be afraid of if I'm ready. Being ready for Jesus' coming means that we can be at ease, not worry, rest well. We don't want to be complacent and lethargic. There's kind of tension here. We don't want to be so at ease that we're not ready. But if we are at ease, if we are ready, excuse me, we can be at ease. If we have enough oil in our lamps and are patiently waiting, we can be confident that the groom isn't going to attack us when he arrives, but rather welcome us warmly and joyously into his wedding celebration. It's a season of Lent, time of Lent. It's a time in which we focus on self-reflection, asking God to reveal to us what needs to change in our lives, what needs to change so that we're ready for Christ's return. We don't need to worry about the timing of that return. We just need to make sure we're ready by doing the right things, being faithful, by staying patient. And when we are ready, we can be at ease and sleep well, trusting that the groom welcomes us into his wedding feast.